Welcome, folks, to the Slowpoke Podcast once again. I am, of course, Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
And I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
Thank you for joining us for this brilliant episode of what I believe will be season three. It's difficult to know where this will fall, but we'll find out.
Yes, this should be sometime in season three.
Yeah.
Wink.
Now, we are doing today a game that I have been excited for long before this podcast was a thing, for long before I even... I think knew that Let's Plays were a thing.
Before the earth was turning when we were all just stardust. Well,
this is a game that I have been excited to play since I first heard of it, which was almost as soon after it came out, but just never got around to it. Hey, it's the theme of the show.
We're doing it.
This is Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Mm-hmm. I forget about this game so often, which is surprising because it's so wonderful.
Mm.
I'm so glad we got to it. I feel like it's a game everyone was like, oh, Brothers. Oh, yeah, everyone needs to play Brothers. Oh, it's such a good game.
I think that for me, a big part of it as well is it was very easy to say, oh, but it's probably just a gimmick though. It's very easy to dismiss this game having not played it as its core gimmick. And so for anybody who hasn't heard of Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, it is kind of billed as a single player co-op game.
Yeah.
The idea being, John, if you would like to take our fine audienceship through it.
I shall. Come with me, audienceship. Basically, there are two brothers, the titular brothers, and you control them.
Both of whom are sons as well, just so that we're up to speed on that.
Thank you for that interruption, David. It was very important. But you control one of them with the right joystick on your controller and the other with the left joystick, for example.
But one player controls them both and they move independently. So this is where you get that concept of the single player co-op game. Mm-hmm. And so you've got these puzzles you need to work out and blah, 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 blah. But that is the gimmick, right? And when you see that initial trailer for it or whatever and you see that mechanic in action, it's like, ooh, how novel.
Ooh, quite interesting.
Mm. But like I said, it's very easy to think of that and then be reminded of any game that came out for the Kinect or any game that came out for the DS in the first month of the DS, where they all just have that one single gimmick, but nothing beyond that.
Yeah, no,
and I knew that Brothers was going to be deeper than that, but it's also easy to go, I'll probably be disappointed.
Yeah, I am really surprised that neither of us played it.
Mm.
Like, sorry, my stomach just made such
loud
noise. Oh,
you had some Borgarigmi.
Borgarigmi.
It's the fancy term for tummy grumbles.
It was so loud and so strong. I had to pause.
I'm pretty sure I'm pronouncing that right.
Okay. Anyway, excuse me.
That's your word for the day, audience. Borgarigmi.
Oh, you know, because you've said that, I now realize this is all going to stay in. So I am surprised, but only after playing the game. Before, I wasn't, which makes perfect sense.
So when you say surprised at the fact that we hadn't played it.
Yeah.
So you're after having played it, you know that it's so good and are surprised that neither of us got to it before now based on the goodness you understand it having since you've played it.
I feel like that's what I was going for.
Okay.
Not that that makes any sense, but that was what I was going for. Really, this game interested me, and the reason I knew about it was a potential for a co-op game because it's billed as a single player co-op, but I was like, oh, but it's a perfect game to actually play co-op.
Yeah.
Sharing a controller between you and someone special.
Or you can
your
do,
shoulders touching.
You can do like intimate. The socially contemporary thing, which is to just bind the keys separately and each have your own controller.
David, you are so much fun at
parties.
You don't
have to go through this whole like Cronenberg fucking fly mistake to play on a single controller.
So the reason why I actually pictured the single controller, because it was originally an Xbox 360 game.
Yeah, by about a month.
Yeah.
And before it came out on everything else.
I honestly forgot. I didn't realize that it came out on anything else. I even didn't realize I owned it until we went to do it. But I guess that makes more sense if you wanted to be logical about things.
The other thing that surprises me about this game is, to me, it's a big indie title. It's an indie title that exploded. And if, you know, the success of Haze Light, the Splinter Studio that's kind of riding on the back of their success with this game is any indication, it actually was in real terms. But no one I know other than you has played it.
Yeah.
And if you guys have taken a closer look at the cover art for this, there's also apparently no fucking promotional imagery online. I had to take something which I think is a screenshot from like a 480 version of the trailer for our goddamn cover art for this episode. Like, it just feels like no one is actually talking about it, but my perception was that everyone was talking about this game. It was appeared on an episode of Extra Credits was how I heard about it in the beginning.
I mean, like, and like when they were releasing A Way Out, which is one of the reasons why we're doing this game now,
because yeah.
it hopefully is coming
announcing out. A way out is what he means by that, to yes. place this in time.
Everyone was so excited for it. Everyone was excited for this game that basically didn't exist. But when I went to play it, multiple people actually messaged me being like, oh, get ready to talk about the emotions. And I'm like, what?
Oh, of Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually had someone...
I kind of hate it when people do that.
Yes. I mean, that's true, but we don't need to hate our listeners.
No. Not so much our listeners. Like, what I'm talking about is when I'm playing a game that someone knows is an emotional experience, something like Firewatch or... Soma.
Yes.
And they message me on the Steam Messenger to be all like, oh, you're in for a wild ride. It's like, thanks, Dad, who saw me watching a horror movie. Thanks, Dad, who wanted to ruin The Godfather when he heard that I was going to watch The Godfather for the first time.
People just want to let you know that they're better than you.
Just,
and that they've
just
played
yeah, say it at the end. Say it after I'm done. Okay. Say, hey, I saw you were playing Firewatch yesterday. You want to talk about it? It's such a good game.
But yeah, apart from that, and the game being sad that I kind of knew, that's it. That's all I knew about this game.
Yeah, and that's pretty much... I pretty much only had the mechanics, right? And I had a vague idea that it was going to be a story about family, and there was going to be a kind of fairy tale aspect to it, but I got that mostly from the images.
Mm.
The only thing I actually... Hard fact that I knew about this game was that single-player co-op mechanic.
It's weird. It feels like a Ghost in the Shell.
Why?
An idea that, like, a thing that exists that we don't know how it... Anyway.
Okay. Okay. I'll trust you. I've not seen Ghost in the Shell.
It's fine. But when I did play the game, I actually found it to be really endearing.
Yeah. This is, like, endearing, definitely.
Yep.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this, because it's not the game that I'm most excited at having played. It's relatively short, and it does... what it does very, very well, but not in a way that leaves me, like, devastated, like something like Firewatch or Life is Strange did.
Doesn't
right?
come in here and wreck your heart.
Yeah. But it is such a good example of a well-designed game.
Yep.
It's
yep.
like,
yep.
you know how when people talk about film theory, they always point to, like, Star Wars or Tootsie or, like, to point to these, like...
Just an interesting collection of examples.
Yeah, but, yeah. like, there are these five or six movies that everyone points to as being, like, yeah, this is a great example of solid movie structure and solid movie pacing. And, like, The Matrix, the original Matrix is a great example of a solid three-act structure. Like, you don't point to a Scorsese film
sure.
to talk about
technique.
Basic techniques and solid fundamentals, right?
Yeah.
But this game... I think is just such a great example of very clever design
yep.
that all designers should think about when implementing their own games.
That is, that
you know?
It's so funny that you talk about that, because that's exactly what I thought as I played this. I was like, especially recently in our time now, as we record this, we've had a lot of experience with people who have made games and are showing off their demos.
Yeah.
And just like, everybody needs to play this game, and you need to be doing something similar if you want to exhibit yourself in a similar way.
Yeah, like, I want to be very clear here, because, like, the Scorsese example that I'm talking about is, like, not every single movie should be made to the same structure, but when learning about how to make movies, observing tried and true methods can help you as a starting off point to build
sure.
bigger things from.
That's
you know,
what I meant.
Not every director is Spielberg, right?
Yeah.
And not every studio is going to be Camposanto or...
And we shouldn't punish and exile those people.
Of course. Yeah, no, definitely.
Like,
and so if you
we're
are
not
making,
the Mackle brothers.
Yeah, if you are making the top shit, awesome, way out there experimenting with art, fuck yes, I love it. I love
yes.
everything about it.
We definitely do.
But it's such a good, I think, learning experience and point of comparison, like you say, for... Exhibiting, I can see what you're coming from with that, but
yep.
like that's also a whole new skill in itself.
Definitely.
And like this, it's just such a... We'll talk about every single reason why, because we're talking in circles here about basically semantics. Sorry, that's on me. But no, this is a really interesting game for a whole bunch of reasons. What was... Because you mentioned that it was endearing.
Yeah.
Like, what else, as far as your expectations go, were super well met or super disappointed?
So I found the actual experience of playing through the game to be really enjoyable. Even like the puzzles and stuff like that that were there, which we'll explain later.
Yeah.
The way that they're presented is... It's in a way I like.
Because the puzzles as well, maybe this is about my own experience with current games,
yeah.
but there are a lot of games that bill themselves as puzzle games that aren't so much puzzle games as they are find the key to open the lock
yeah,
games,
yeah, yeah.
you know? Or it'll be like, hey, tell me my favorite color to open this door, and you talk to the person next to them who tells you the favorite color and they open the door. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas this was like an actual puzzle game that required some, you know, spatial awareness and some clever use of the mechanics that, that play in the game. So,
yeah, I get what you mean.
Like, it wasn't Portal or anything, but it was still an actual puzzle game, which I wasn't necessarily expecting in the strictest sense.
I think it was very satisfying, which I think is the most important. It is one of the important things for me.
It's a really good... Because I haven't even thought about that. It's such a good...
All right, we're going to talk about the puzzles, right?
Yeah, okay? I guess we're on puzzles now.
Yeah. Right? The reason I like the puzzle in this game is they're not overly complicated, but they are satisfying to complete and do.
Yes, and like I said, we're not at Portal levels here. Like, if you can remember the first time you played Portal and your brain clicked into that thinking and there was just like that moment of... I am a cognitive god. It wasn't, oh my god, I'm thinking with Portals now levels, but there was definitely still a point where you were like, okay, I'm thinking with two brothers now.
Two brothers.
And they run.
Yeah.
But no, I'm thinking in this way, this two halves of one whole way, you know?
And the brothers have different strengths. One is a bigger brother and there's the younger brother who's smaller. And so they have different strength as well. And so you have to use the bigger brother to do heavy things.
Yeah. And like the little brother can squeeze through certain gaps. This is going to make it sound so lame, right? It is. Yeah. But this is ready for it, David. This is not a spoiler, really. Mm. Like, it's a mechanical reveal for sort of about a quarter of the way into the game.
Sure.
But there's a point where you have a long pipe that you need to move. And to get to it's very easy because you just walk up to it. But then when you walk it back to where you need it to be, you have to navigate it around all of this debris that's in the level.
Yeah.
And Couch Moving Simulator sounds like a really shitty gameplay moment. It's one of these little satisfying points where you're like, I have to operate like two people trying to work this out.
And what I found so satisfying is I have a lot of experience moving couches.
Yeah.
So when I saw that long pipe, and because I'd gotten so used to controlling the two brothers, I was like, oh, we've got to make sure that we can move this around corners. And I did it, no issue.
Same. Like, right? I had no problem with it.
And like, but to me, it had like, you see the puzzle, you understand the puzzle, and you can execute the puzzle. And this is something within the loops that they were creating, which was just satisfying.
The whole game, the entire game, there was only one puzzle where I was like, I'm not 100% sure what's expected of me here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about all of that in more detail, but what I think, because we've stumbled onto, I think, one of the biggest strengths of this game, and that's this idea of setup and payoff, right? They seed everything so well, and so that when it comes to the point where that needs to pay off, it's there and it's ready and it's in your mind.
Yeah.
And so this particular pipe puzzle is not the best example of this because it's kind of a self-contained thing. You don't really have a navigation issue prior to that.
One of the most interesting kind of things was how you sort of control the brothers and you just jump. And like, you can climb things and the brothers will have like these two continuous paths where they can climb up.
Yeah.
And then the game has them work together to then climb. And later I'm going to reveal why this is emotionally important to thus illustrate the point of how the game is paying off the mechanical differences.
So I think the simplest way that we can do this, right? Because this is a very difficult game to talk about in segments because everything about this game does everything else at the same time.
Yeah.
We can't just talk about visuals because the visual is used to inform the narrative and the emotional journey of the characters and the puzzle design. And we can't just talk about the basic mechanics in some of these puzzles in isolation because that informs the relationship of the characters and it informs their world and their point and their journey and everything.
Like,
part of the reason this game, I think, is such an excellent example of quality design is, for want of a less industry term, is the efficiency of design.
It's
that nothing is wasted, you know? that's
a phrase I always say.
Yeah.
I love that when it's just everything is utilized and it's not just singularly purposed. It is multifunctional within the media.
Yeah.
It is mechanically important. It is narratively important. It hits every beat. It comes in, it's like a holistic way of creating a game, which mirrors like my favorite films. It's like when a character says a piece of dialogue, that's not only important for the scene, but for their motivation and for the story.
And it's also just entertaining to watch, right? Like we all hate exposition scenes. It's just a dump of text because we need to understand why the MacGuffin is important.
Yeah. To me, this game is just an example of how to masterclass in multi functioning every part.
Yeah,
every
element. And there's no point in this game that is just an exposition dump, or is just an action scene, or is just an arena.
Talking about exposition, none of the characters actually say human words.
Yes, so let's talk about some basic shape of the game stuff like that, because I'm concerned that a lot of the listeners might not have actually played this or be familiar with it.
Sure.
So yeah, that's one of the big things about the game. There is no true dialogue. People speak in gibberish to one another.
And far as we know. It'd be really awkward if they were speaking a whole other language.
There is consistency to it. The two brothers do have names. I think one is Naya and the other one is IE, I think.
Yes.
But the volume of the dialogue is also super, super low because it's not the focus, right? Mm-hmm. So they're speaking some kind of made-up language or some kind of gibberish that you're not supposed to understand. And all of their interactions are informed by their body language and the quality of the animation in the game.
Mm-hmm. And the physicality and their reactions to things. Mm. The brothers will react to a lot of different things within the world, and their reactions help inform their characters.
Yes.
Right?
So that's another basic thing as well that I think is important to understand. We talked about the fact that one brother is on the left stick, the other brother is on the right stick.
Yep.
The older brother being on the left, when you want to make them interact with something, you pull the left trigger. With the younger brother, you pull the right trigger. So it's like
we have now explained all the controls.
Yeah, the controller is split in two. If you're playing this game with a controller, which is very much the intended way, the older brother, who is more goal-oriented and he's more mature and he's more pragmatic, is on the stick that you are more used to using.
Yes.
So because it does take a lot of brain work to get used to this sense of movement, because if the brothers are on the wrong side of the screen, you get mixed up a little bit.
And that is just, especially very early on when you're playing, you'd be like, oh shit, I gotta stop and recenter and then split them. Cause like, sometimes you get into those little bumps, but I think that's not that. It's not a problem.
So you get lost with both of them is the point, but you get lost with the older brother much less because you're used to using the left stick as motion.
Sure.
The right stick as motion is significantly less practiced, for me at least.
Yeah.
And so this younger brother, who is a little bit more distractible, a little bit more kind of carefree and go with the wind,
not only
often would just kind of meander around just because I couldn't control him properly.
And that's reinforced by how he reacts in the world himself. Mm. Not only is his character interested in things, he's playful, but your play as him is it's intentionally, but for you, it's unintentionally rambunctious.
Yeah.
He'll move around oddly and do strange things.
And so it's this great combination of, for want of a better term, emergent play, understanding player input and what that will create in the game.
Yeah.
And they mix that with these little scripted moments. So like, if you go up to an NPC, the older brother will walk up and show them the map and be all like, where do I need to go? Or the younger brother might walk up and just play with their cat or, you know, laugh for a bit or like throw a little bit of a tantrum, like all of this little.
And that's why I found like so revealing of their characters.
Mm.
The younger brother is enjoying this journey, but the older brother is like, no, we have a purpose. We have a mission.
Yeah. It's very much like a red Oni, blue Oni type thing. The older brother is blue coded. The younger brother is red coded. And, you know, you've got the more serious Spock and the more impulse driven Kirk kind of split along that trope.
Yeah.
So they lean into that and it's very consistent, but what makes it brilliant is the way the control scheme just brings that to life in a moment-to-moment sense.
And how they mirror it everywhere in the game.
Mm. So that also kind of dovetails into animation as well, because the animation quality in this game, both again in cutscenes for the sake of that scripted sections, as well as in the way that the brothers move and also in those little interact with NPC moments, all of the animation is thought through in that way as well to continue to create this consistency of characters. And there's a lot of like really basic things, like when you slide down an incline, the older brother kind of surfs down it on his feet, whereas the younger brother kind of slides down on his butt. And I'm going to bring that back up when we're spoiler free.
All right.
But there's a particular moment where stuff like that changes and it's relevant to that moment. You know, God, there's so much story stuff. Like I said, it's so hard to not go into the later game stuff when I'm talking about this.
So yeah, I just want to cover that the story itself, the actual story,
the core plot.
The core plot is very straightforward.
Yeah.
The brother's father is sick and they're going to get the thing to fix him.
Yeah, that's their goal. They have to go and get magic medicine to make their father not sick anymore.
I get worried that if I don't explain the very basics like that. Yeah, I think we've now covered it all. That's the basics. So your brothers, you're controlling them on this journey, and they're all working together, and you're experiencing this world, and it does have that sense of journey as well.
Yeah, like it's got a very, very fairy tale kind of feel, but sort of not quite as dark as Grimm, but closer to that than Disney, definitely. Yeah. So the fairy tale feel of it is all super reinforced by how the whole environment looks and everything. Like, again, it's another really strong example of good design, because it's not high fidelity, it's not high quality graphics, and there is a certain floatiness and sort of lack of precision to some elements of it.
It's like the detail isn't there, but like the collage itself.
Yeah, is just exactly. Like,
so this game looked absolutely gorgeous, and we're going to mention it now. I'm going to have my bloody bench breakdown. So one of my favorite moments from Life is Strange is when you could just chill. You just take a moment to chill, and the scene has a little play out.
Yeah, you take a little photo or whatever.
Yeah. Mm. In this, there's benches scattered throughout the world, even in some weird places, like battlefields.
Yeah, places where you're just like, who put a bench here?
Yeah, but you can just take a seat, have a sit down, and the camera will pan right out so you can get fully in capture the environment that you're in. And I was honestly breathtaken.
You were breath-token.
I was breath-token.
I was breathless. My breath got took.
It was right out of
Liam
me.
Liam Neeson, get my breath back.
This 2013 Xbox 360 game.
Indie game.
Indie Xbox 360 indie game. Just breathtaking. I've taken screenshots. They're my new computer background.
Yeah, it looks really fucking good.
Yeah.
But more than that, because it sounds like, oh, benches, I just wanted to show off their art. Okay, no, that's not what they're for. So this whole thing has this, like I said, this fairy tale kind of feel to it. It's a journey. It's a journey of growth and of coming of age and all that kind of stuff. And you have these moments where they give you these benches, or other times where they just force it by the use of the camera angle when you're climbing on something and the camera's locked off.
Yeah.
But they show you the progress you've made through this section. So you'll generally be quite high up or quite low down, and you'll get this vision, this view, this vista of where you're going or where you've been. And it just constantly reinforces the distance, like the emotional distance that your characters have traveled.
Yeah, this is something that Alan Wake did, but I feel like was better executed in this game.
Yeah, this Alan Wake is a game that I was not super hot on, but this was a good element of it that this game does 5-10 times better. It's just so perfect, and they're so well paced, you know?
Yeah, it not only are the beats when it occurs well timed, the way they occur is actually really useful for the narrative and the flow.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say.
And like that point is exactly why I think the biggest distinction is between this and Alan Wake. Because there are plenty of games like Gears of War or whatever, the Nathan Drake ones, Uncharted, right?
Yeah.
Where they'll go, oh man, we got to get to that golden statue.
Look at that golden statue.
And it's more of like it's almost like a player orientation thing. It's more like a level design UX
direction
type thing.
Kind of thing. It's like, okay,
it's like we need the player to not get lost.
Yeah.
Right?
They need to go that way. Put a thing over there.
Yeah. Put something shiny over in that part of the environment.
But in Brothers, not only do they do forwards, they do backwards as well.
Yeah. And in both cases, I feel like the primary purpose of it is thematic and narrative based. So they're foreshadowing something. Or like I said, they're showing like the distance that you've traveled and how removed you are. And like so much of this, the level design is vertical. You mentioned that the Brothers do this climbing thing that's important for a whole bunch of reasons, but so much of the design is about scaling or descending, and there are thematic elements to that as well, but I just think that one of the big advantages of it is it lends itself so well to being like, oh shit, that tiny farm down there, that's where I was 30 minutes ago.
Or what's that group of people off in the distance? Who are they?
Yeah, what's going to happen when I go down there? Yeah. You know, it's it sounds so basic. And that's the thing that sucks so much about talking about a game that just nails all the fundamentals. It's like, yeah, it's solid. It's solid. Check it out, guys. It's solid. You know what? They do things with time. Well done.
Maybe this is why this game is kind of underspoken.
Yeah.
Because it speaks for itself. You experience.
It's just like a way out, though, because we can't talk about this game without talking about a way out. So just to better clarify what we were saying before, this was done by Starbreeze, I think.
Yes.
I'll double check that. Starbreeze Studios did this one.
Yep.
And a group of the team that worked on this split off to make Haze Light, which is making A Way Out, the, for those of you who need a bit of a refresher, the split-screen co-op bust-out-of-prison Shawshank Redemption
19-
spiritual kind of thing.
40s, 50s, greaser kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, breakout film game.
And so, again, I saw that game at E3, and I'm like, oh, but is it gonna just disappoint me because it's a gimmick?
Yeah.
Like, I'm so excited for it, the trailer is so good, but it could just be a gimmick and I need to keep my expectations in check.
Yeah.
But Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons is such a full game. It's such a well-executed across-the-board game that I at this point, I'm gonna say it, I'm letting the hype dog off the leash, son.
Oh, it's
fuck the premise of this fucking show. I'm excited for A Way Out.
We can use all those dogs barking right now. It's good to get excited because I feel like this Brothers is an example of a, if not a director or a studio, who knows, but the team itself understood what they were doing and they executed it so
yeah,
well.
It's again, and it's such a generic nothing thing to say. Oh, the team knew what kind of game they wanted to make and then they made that game. Like, it's just such a motivational speaker thing to say. I understand, audience, trust me, I understand how generic and plain everything we're saying sounds like. But it really is just well done.
Isn't it interesting how we could spend forever entertaining describing how something fails, but we're at a lack of words to describe how excellent something
is? Yeah, quite frankly, because it's easier to say when something fails than when it works, right? I mean, Movie Bob does really that good based on what he feels is the need. There's almost this unwritten belief in critique that things that work are self-evident and don't need to be examined, which is wrong. It is just a wrong thing to say.
If we don't talk about things that are good, people won't notice them.
Yeah, and they won't notice, again, this is the whole point that really that good exists, they won't notice why these things are good, you know? And it's so easy to sit back and go, The Witcher 3 is great because everyone bought it. Yeah. You know, I think that's such a reductive way to think about something, you know?
Yeah, I think that Brothers is just so excellent. And if we're going to sort of give a stop to the non-spoiler talk and we're just going to end it, like, if you want to have a spoiler-free time, we've done as much as we can.
Yeah.
We both love this. I think that's clearly evident.
I don't know how much it costs, but 4-hour playtime. So it's very easy to go through. And without wanting to sound like the dude who's telling you how to live your lives, especially if you want to make games, I would say that this is a good one to look at.
If you're going to make games, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to tell regular people. Yeah,
I don't want to tell game students who know more about making games what they should do if they want to know how to make games, but I think this is a great thing to at least take apart, you know?
Yeah, even if it's not the game you're going to make. It's such a clear example of good design, right?
It's like across the board, well done. Okay. A+, high five.
All right, we're done. We're done with all right. that, okay? But me and David liked it. Good design. We're going to...
Spoiler time, because...
The butler did it!
Yeah, no!
No.
Jeeves, why? Yeah, the part of the reason this game is hard to talk about without spoilers is, like we said, everything is interwoven to everything else.
Yeah.
Okay? So, let's talk some stuff that we missed so far. So, one of the puzzle things I wanted to use as an example of how things are well-seeded. There's a puzzle early on where there's a dog that's in a hayfield.
Yep.
And it is chasing down the brothers.
It sees the brothers and it just comes right up.
It's a big dog.
It's a big dog.
It's a big dog. It's a big scary dog.
You actually see it earlier in a cage, if you're paying attention.
Oh, yes, that is true. Yeah, there's a point earlier on.
Foreshadowing.
Now, this puzzle involves you having to get one of the brothers, because the dog is sort of lower down and can't get up to you. So you have to, like, dash across the field and then get to a high point so the dog can't grab at you.
Yeah.
But if the dog is near you, you can't outrun it.
Yeah.
So you get one brother to distract the dog, the other brother to leapfrog to the next piece of safe terrain, then him to distract the dog, and the other brother to rush back across.
Repeat until you've crossed the field and left that pesky dog behind.
So, simple puzzle, self-evident.
Yep.
Another thing that they establish early on is that the younger brother can squeeze through fence bars.
Yeah.
So these are both puzzles that you run into very early on. About maybe a quarter to halfway through the game, there's actually a pretty important, what I guess you'd call a boss fight, where there's a troll who is trying to get you, right? And you have to use the older brother the younger brother to distract the troll into a cage, the older brother to shut the cage, and then the younger brother to sneak out through the bars.
Yep.
And that puzzle, again, sounds so simple, but it's simple because they seeded it, because yes. they gave you the ideas that you need to go forward and do this. And so there's some puzzles in this game that require, because this is all time pressure stuff. You're getting yeah. attacked by this massive troll that's going to crunch you.
Yeah.
But you have all the information you need to solve this puzzle under pressure because they've set it all up for you. Yeah. It's very well designed.
I think there's all kinds of puzzles. I think one of the games we're going to talk about eventually is The Witness, which is going to be a lot of brain teasery kind of thing.
Yes.
Right? And like understanding, like, these puzzles are satisfying to solve, mm. right? And their execution and the way that they're taught to you is so interwoven within the world and the sense of place.
Yeah.
One of the things I thought about when I was playing this, in some games, you're just like, who made this key card system for these doors? This facility would not run efficiently if you were having to do all these button presses.
Yeah.
Like, if we both had to press this button to open this door or what have you. But all the puzzles feel natural within the world.
Yeah.
Like, they're a result of the character's journey and the things they face.
And that's definitely true. And so you're not getting something that's quite like, again, Portal is a good point of comparison, which is very, very contrived to yes. get that environment, but still feels natural because they write it really well.
Yeah.
One of the major advantages of having these puzzles feel kind of natural and as part of the world is that you don't realize they're training you for later stuff.
Yeah. yeah?
And so I'm reminded of Portal because I've listened to the developer commentary of that game. If you haven't, you should. It's awesome and fascinating. And one of the things they talk about is balancing the difficulty curve for the puzzles. If yep. it's too hard, when the player solves it, they're frustrated that it took them so long and they feel stupid. If it's yep. too easy, they don't feel like they've accomplished anything. So having a game like Brothers, where every single puzzle made me feel at least a little bit clever,
yep.
for a studio that's that size, as opposed to fucking Valve money,
yeah, yeah.
like I said, this puzzle with the giant, I felt like I was clever, even though in retrospect now I realize that I had been taught how to do it before that, long before that point. You know, it's so fucking perfect.
Even the game's tutorial has narrative payoff at the end of the game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Even the basic intro moments when you learn to use the two brothers and they have to interact and you're revealed that the younger brother is afraid of swimming and the older brother has to help him. The older brother has to help him. You have to use the older brother's trigger.
This is so much because right. this one mechanic, there's so much in that, right? So very basic. The prologue cutscene to the game.
Yep.
You see the younger brother is out at sea with their mum on like a little rowboat.
Yep.
There's a storm. The mother drowns and the younger brother is not able to save her. He's not strong enough to pull her back into the boat.
The time David took to explain that is how long that cutscene plays in the game.
It's very, very short.
Right? Yeah. But it tells you everything you need to know.
And obviously there's the music and everything that just perfectly captures the tone of it, all of that. It's yep. really, really well done. So you have this brother, this younger brother who doesn't swim. And it isn't just that he doesn't know how. It's that he has trauma that makes yep. him afraid of water, just yep. like Jim Carrey in The Truman Show.
Yes.
And wonderful reference. So this idea that the younger brother can never swim
yep.
is a reinforcement of this trauma he has about losing one parent already, which increases the stakes of losing the remaining parent, you know? Mm-hmm. You've also got, like John said, this reliance that the younger brother has a reliance on the older brother that's incredibly important. Every time you come across any body of water, the younger brother has to hold on to the shoulders yep. of the older one.
And you do that by, you have to pull the trigger to activate the younger brother to hold on. So it's setting up this muscle memory thing.
Yeah, there's this haptic thing yeah. there.
You're using your right hand to control the younger brother and you hold the trigger down with your right hand to grab on while this swims. Like, it's reinforcing this thing.
Yeah, and like one, I know where you're going with this. Yeah. Trust me, I know where you're
going. No, I know.
But before we move away from, there is one last thing I want to say, is that these water sections, there's just a practical reason for that as well, in that it's one thing to have two brothers walking around where you can move them around and do everything independently, but yeah. when you're in the water, it just becomes too much. And so they have a narrative excuse for why you have to keep them right next to each other whenever they're swimming.
You yeah. know,
like, so many things are accomplished by this one conceit of younger brother can't swim alone.
And because you're reinforced into this physicality of having to cling on, when they separate the two brothers in the water, you can feel
it. Yeah, the panic. Like, the panic. panic of when it happens, because there's a point where they get swept down a waterfall, for example, and then they're on two separate streams, and the older brother is desperately trying to fight the current to, at least when I was playing, I was trying to make the older brother desperately fight the current.
Yeah.
Because the younger brother is like sputtering and barely staying above water. And
you know he can't swim and refuses to, right? It's just reinforced altogether. And then when you have this intro section that introduces you to all of this, and it teaches you this reliance, and the characters have to work together, and they climb together side by side. Now, I want to give a really big spoiler warning.
Yeah, this is massive, massive spoiler stuff
game
coming
spoilers,
up on here.
Right? We've, like, to fully discuss this and just to tear it apart and really talk about it, we've got to go all the way.
I really hope you've all played this game, seriously. But John, please, we've done our due diligence.
There's nothing else we can do.
Yeah.
Right? David, I'm taking off the safeties. We're going to launch the nukes. When the older brother dies and is gone and you no longer control them, and you're just left with the younger brother, and the game takes you right back to the start where you're at that prologue and you face that cliff face with two stone climbing spots, but there's only one of you.
Yeah.
And then when you go back to those puzzles and you go to the water and you're there, the younger brother alone.
Yeah. The older brother dies right near the end of the game. And then you have to, just as a young brother, do this one last little section of you getting back to your house to give your father the medicine that you've recovered for him.
Yeah.
God, there's so much I want to say, because it's every single point. Again, it's just a fucking vast web of how every element of this game connects to every single one.
I just went for the biggest one because there's so much.
So the death of this older brother, you come back, and like we said, the younger brother now has to swim. And he can't. And, you know, John was setting up this whole idea of this muscle memory. The way that you actually... Because if you go to the edge of the water of the younger brother, he refuses to swim across
it. And, you know, you can even try and, like, whenever you have something you want to interact with in the game, you activate the trigger. So you send the younger brother there, because the game has taught you. You go there, you pull the trigger. This is an important moment. But he refuses again and again. There's nothing you can do to get him to go into that water.
Yeah, until you pull on the left trigger for the brother who's not there.
Yeah.
And this is, again, it's going to sound a little bit cliched, like, without having played this whole thing and gone through it all.
Yeah.
But you pull the left trigger and you can kind of hear the older brother's voice in the back of the younger brother's head supporting him. And that's where he musters up the courage and swims across this water.
And then if you let go of that left trigger, he swims back to shore. He freezes. You have to hold it down. It has to be a thing you do.
And like I said, there's setup and payoff here, because throughout the whole game, it's more told from the younger brother's perspective than the older one. And there's a lot of time that he spends thinking about his mother who died. And there are little moments where you can see him sort of gaining strength from her memory as well. So this doesn't just come out of nowhere. It is also established and set up and pays off in this last moment. One of the other brilliant things I love about this section is, I mentioned before, the older brother's on the left stick, the stick that you're most comfortable with. The younger brother's on the right stick, the one that is weird and alien. And over the course of the game, eventually you get used to controlling both brothers with these two sticks. But then you get to a point where you're only using the right, and it just feels so absent and so wrong again. Like, it completely pulls the rug out from under you again, and you're almost back to that first moment where you're trying to figure out how the basic controls for the game work. And you just feel so lost.
And then this intro prologue moment for you is just so, again, it's just so alien, because you're like, I can't do this alone. My brother's not here.
Mm.
But then
I can't pull this giant lever. I can't boost myself up this little cliff.
But then you just, you use, it's like, it sounds so trite to say it, but you pull the trigger and he does it. The game has invested the time and effort to build this emotional payoff for such a simple action. And I just think it's amazing.
I'm going to try my best to not qualify it anymore, but it is powerful in the moment, and it works. It just works so well. And if you can hear something that's like, oh, every single children's movie ever, but this time it's good, that should be in evidence of the other stuff that works in this game. Something else that I want to cover now that we have lifted the spoiler warning.
Yeah. Sorry, I had to go through that rant. It was just so...
Yeah, a messy game to talk about for all of the reasons that we've said. But one of the things that I think is really well... Again, this idea of seeding and this constant reminder and this constant reinforcement of themes. Well, obviously, one of the biggest themes of the game is that of mortality. I mean, there's family relationships and stuff in there as well. But I think that the biggest theme is is loss. It's the loss of someone close to you.
The game begins with the younger brother at his mother's grave. The father is dying.
And like, both children are clearly at risk on this journey. It's not safe for them.
And they
constantly remind you of this throughout the whole thing. There's a point where you come across a father who lost his family in a house fire.
Yeah.
And there is a slight content note here, but it's also difficult to say that without just saying what happens.
Yeah.
The father tries to take his own life.
Yeah.
He ties a rope around a tree branch and stands onto a stool. And as you just stumble across him, he's not someone you know. He's just some guy out in the wild.
Yeah.
He steps off. And so the reaction is that the older brother rushes to him, at least the way I played it,
yeah,
to hold his weight, and the younger brother rushes to undo the rope. And so you have this reminder of the themes of the game, the power and the stakes. What's the word I'm looking for here? The reality of losing a family member and losing someone who you love and who's close to you, and a momentary mechanical kind of way for these characters to interact that hasn't been like anything up to this point before it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very, very powerful moment on every level.
Yeah.
There are other reminders of mortality as well. I mean, you said one of your favorite parts was the giant's battlefield.
Oh, yeah. So first you find a castle that's for giants.
Yeah.
You're like, this is odd, a giant's castle. And then you stumble across a battlefield.
And there's corpses everywhere.
And they're giants. And you have to traverse through all this blood, and you have to move the giants' bodies out the way, and you have to get in there with the grossness of all of it.
Mm.
And it feels like you can feel the brothers having to grapple with death.
Yeah,
and, like, understanding
without dialogue, there still is voice acting, and you can hear them interacting with one another even outside of cutscenes. They'll talk to one another, and you can hear the emotion in their voices. And these are just two examples of a whole range of different reminders of that theme. And I keep coming back to this because it's one of the things that I'm most impressed about. You never forget about anything. The game is constantly reminding you of things, constantly setting things up. And then when they eventually, it's time for them to pay off, it's so earned, you know.
Yeah, I was saying,
they just earn it.
We came to the same realization. Mm. The game, you know, when you play a game and someone dies and they go, oh, the person you care about dies, and you go, no, they didn't.
No, I don't actually care about that.
Right? It's because they haven't done this kind of groundwork to invest you, to bring you in. I think in games, it happens a lot for me.
Yeah.
In games, they always seem to use narrative tropes to try and bring investment in.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before as well, because every game is made differently. Like, there are plenty of games where they make the levels and the set pieces and the characters and the environments, and then they go, okay, someone needs to write a story that fits everything we've written.
Yeah, yeah.
And they have to write characters that match, you know, so basically the character, the archetype of the character is written by the 3D artist, not by the story writer. You know what I'm trying to say?
The story runner. Like person. Yeah.
And so sometimes the reason these things are disjointed is because they were brought in at the last, not the last minute, literally, but they were brought in right at the end of the process and have to work with pieces that are already established. This is obviously not one of those games. This is a game that was, I feel, created very cohesively at every stage of development. And that is part of the reason why all of these things work together. I had something about animation that I was going to bring up now that we're past the spoiler point. When the older brother goes down a slope, he kind of surfs.
Yeah,
when the younger
brother
goes down, he kind of slides on his ass.
You mentioned that early on.
Yeah. There's a point in the game where you come across a woman who is beset by a group of cultists, basically.
Yeah.
And you sneak in and you save this woman and you leave. And there's a whole section of the game in the snow where you're accompanied by her.
Yes.
And it becomes almost like a three-person team. And there are a bunch of puzzles you have to solve with three people.
Yeah, and she'll help you do things and stuff like that.
And so much about her character is informed by the way she moves. You know, she is very capable and confident, and she's able to be nimble and all of this kind of stuff.
After you release her,
yeah. I have no idea how she got captured, but through all of these sections, she's more physically capable and nimble than both of the brothers, and she's a lot more comfortable on ice as well.
Yeah, and that's like revealed over time.
Yeah.
So at first, she's literally a damsel. She's tied up. you have to rescue her. But then as you go on and as you encounter more things with her and explore the environment, you can see her be more and more capable.
Yeah, and the reason I brought all of this up in relation to the sliding down hills is this is the only part of the game where the older brother slides down like the younger one does, kind of awkwardly and on his butt, when he's sliding down ice sheets, where she stands tall and slides down like he would, and it kind of just shows this reorganizing of the dynamics of the group.
Yeah.
There are some tropes in this part that aren't super awesome.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about those. The thing that's very interesting is, like I said, she's very nimble and kind of strong as well. And as you go on, if you're anything like me, you're like, huh, she's pretty strong.
The moment that stands out to me is when the brothers are separated.
At the trench?
Yes. Yeah. It's really interesting that we always come back to the same points. Anyway.
Because the game is designed well, and we're supposed to realize these things at these points.
So, yeah, the brothers are running along. The younger brother's on the right side. He encounters a gate. The older brother has to climb up a wall and then across a wooden beam and then climb down the other side. And the woman just jumps right across.
Yeah, and it's pretty far. Even before this, I was kind of like, okay, what's the deal with her a little bit? But this was the point where I was just all like, no, she's not human.
But then, immediately when that happens, something else occurs.
Yeah.
And that distracts you momentarily. So, you know, if you were like me, you completely forget about your revelation.
See, I didn't completely forget, but there was that moment where I was like, okay, we helped her. She's now helping us. And there's this, because the thing that happens is there's this giant invisible monster that's like stomping around this town. And so your moment of, oh, that was a bit weird, I don't know if I can trust her, is overshadowed by, kind of have to for the meantime, don't I?
Yeah.
And for me, it was very much like, okay, I don't know how much I can trust this person, but I have to for now, because there are bigger fish who are coming to fry us.
Whereas I immediately forgot because there's a giant scary zombie monster. But it's basically the same thing.
Yeah. Anyway, this reveals, we're well past spoilers here. She's revealed to actually be a Shelob in disguise. Mm-hmm. She's a spider, a giant spider.
Yes.
And she's luring the older brother and the younger brother back to her spider hive so she can eat them.
Yeah. She's a giant monster.
Now, let's talk about some trope stuff here, because it starts off with her as a damsel. And they kind of try and subvert that, which is admirable in one way.
Oh, look, but the damsel's really capable.
Yeah, but they take it into the monstrous feminine, where it's like, oh, this woman uses her sexuality to prey on young men.
And especially because right before she captures the brothers, she starts to become overly sexual towards the older brother.
Even before that, if you interact with her, they're kind of flirty.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, the older brother interacts, they're kind of flirty. If the younger brother interacts, he's clearly kind of pouty and jealous that the older brother is focusing his attention on the woman. And so this is where the trope becomes a bit difficult for me, because it's this idea of like, oh, the pure family unit was the real mother who died, and now that she's gone, this other feminine presence is coming in and using sexuality and destroying the family unit and like the pure familial love that they all have. And it's just like they don't focus too long on this. And I do get that it's kind of fairy tale, so there are some concessions that it earns in that regard. But I still was disappointed by that, because I actually thought that woman was cool before I realized that she was going to kill us.
Yeah. And also,
it's pretty graphic the way you take her down too.
Yes, you do pull all of her legs off.
Yeah. It's very
Limbo-esque is the way I thought about it.
Well, I mean, I'm reminded of Doom 2016 and that comment I made that like the only feminine coded enemy in the game has the most explicitly sexual death.
Yeah.
And not quite explicitly sexual in this, but it's also definitely the most viscerally graphic and the most, it's the most disturbing, because you come across like wolves and stuff, you just kind of scare them away with a bit of fire.
Yeah,
the troll, you just trap it in a cage and leave it alone. I think this is the only person they actually kill.
Yeah,
right?
They go all the way. They go to town. Like, they normally scare off or avoid any enemies. This is the one where they kind of do that retribution kind of thing.
You know? Yeah.
And also, for me, it just came to the point where I was like, are there going to be any female characters in this game that I don't rescue?
Mm.
And the answer is no.
No, there's the one that you rescue and then who becomes a monstrous woman. Yeah.
And then there's the female troll.
The whole duplicitous sexual kind of predatory thing.
And the only other character is the female troll that you also rescue at the start.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about her.
That's it.
Yeah.
It's just like, there's some minor characters.
With the troll, it would have been so easy to switch them. Yeah. Like, that was the thing. Like, so it would have been so easy to have the female troll, have you rescue her husband. It's like, just, it would have just been nothing to change that.
And it just makes you realize that the only female characters I've encountered is the mother who is dead.
Yeah.
Then there's the minor villagers. There's like an old lady and,
yeah, they're not really characters.
Yeah. Is they're honestly there for a single scene.
Yeah.
And then a spider woman that you rescue. That's it.
It's also worth mentioning, since we're on the social justice portion of the show.
My paladin armor's on!
I will just say, also, it's a completely white cast as well.
Yes.
Which is disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, again, it would not have been hard to just turn up the inclusivity a little bit. I know there are going to be people who play this game just like, oh, it's a fantasy land set in, like, you know, Scandinavian Europe. That would have all been white. No, they wouldn't have.
That's almost what I said until I realized how wrong that was.
Black people have existed longer than white people and are in all parts of the world.
Yeah. Like,
there's two elements of that argument that shit me. The first is it's a fantasy world. The designer made a choice one way or the other, right? It's a fictional environment. They could have decided whatever they wanted. And the second is it is historically inaccurate. It is historically false. It is a lie to say, oh, in medieval Europe, there were only white people.
Yeah.
That you are wrong if you believe that. You are completely fucking wrong.
Yeah, it's just noticeable now. Mm. I don't know. Yeah, it's just disappointing.
Yeah, and like, when it comes to the gender thing, you're right, like the corralling of women into things that need to be saved or things that use their sexuality to destroy you.
Or both.
Or both is a problem.
Yeah.
However, having the core fact that it's a story that focuses on masculine familial relationships is not a problem. It is about two brothers who are trying to save their father, and it's not like a daddy issues type thing.
It's
like
interesting.
Choosing to tell a story about a son's relationship with their father, that is a perfectly valid topic to cover in art.
I think what was interesting, though, about this interpretation of this discussion of the story, though, is you could swap the genders, and it still plays.
It does, but I think that there is still something uniquely masculine about the relationship that's been fostered there. Like, you can still have an older sister who looks out for their younger sister. Like, that still exists, and that bond is still real. But I feel like there's a tendency for us to look at gender-based issues in art and think, oh, if they could have been women, why weren't they? Defaulting to men is shitty. And that's true. Defaulting to men is shitty. But that doesn't mean there aren't uniquely masculine things to explore. It isn't necessarily sexist to decide that you want to explore
that. Sure, of course. Yeah.
You know? And I think that while you are correct, you could have about 95% of this game play if all of the genders were just straight binary swapped. But I still think that there is some elements of it that would be lost if it wasn't uniquely masculine.
The point I was trying to make by that wasn't the swapping. It was the fact that the design itself is so strong.
Right. I see what you mean.
You could swap it, change that 5% to affect the story a little differently, but the rest of the game is just perfectly fine the way it is. It still invokes all the emotions of the game itself is strong and while it has that masculine brother's aspect of the father, it's not what I would call damagingly stereotypical.
Yes, it is certainly not toxically masculine. I think that there are elements that would be fair to say are stereotypically masculine.
Sure.
Mainly about how the older brother performs his age. You know, so there are things about the way he interacts with other people and that kind of being a straight line towards manhood. Although admittedly, as far as we're depicted with the father themselves, the father is significantly more emotionally open and nurturing and emotionally vulnerable than I think the older brother is.
Yeah.
So that straight line thing I said there, take that back. That was wrong for me to say.
but what I really meant was like the portrayal of masculinity, I don't think was toxic.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
And that's all I wanted to say. Mm. So there's some good things here and there's some bad things here.
Yeah.
But
I think that it's important to acknowledge that the bad things do exist. And I hate this because it sounds like a cop-out, but it's no worse than anything else, you know? And
I mainly
say that because of that thing we were talking about earlier in this episode, this idea that it's so much easier to point out the negatives of something and it makes it sort of disproportionately shines a light onto those.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to defend this game from the things it does wrong. It could have done better.
Yes.
You are correct. It could have done better and it did things that were not super awesome in these two areas, but they are, in terms of volume, very, very small as far as the whole product is concerned.
Yeah.
And I'd be very interested to see how A Way Out goes forward with this because it is also a masculine-focused white game, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how women appear in that game and how people of color appear in that game and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
We're pretty much at time, though. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about with Brothers?
No, I love it. I hope you all enjoyed it too.
Yeah,
you better have played it if you got to this point.
Yeah, it's really good. I hope that those of you who have decided to play it, played it before we drop the big spoiler warning. Because
I may have known some narrative beats ahead of time and they were still just as affecting.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah,
I went in blind and I would recommend that you do the same.
Of course, if you are up to this point.
Yeah, it's a moot point. I hope that you heeded our advice earlier in the episode and decided to do the same before listening to the rest of the episode. Thank you for coming back. Thank you for those of you who stayed. Thank you for those of you who can't hear us because you went off to play. Whatever. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for supporting us.
Yeah. However you choose to absorb the show, thank you.
Yay. Before we move on, let's do our self-promotion type stuff.
Yep.
Our website is slowpokespodcast.com. Our Twitter is @slowpokescast and Facebook is facebook.com/slowpokespodcast. You can also search for us on iTunes or any other podcast distributor.
Yep, all of them, and even on the YouTubes.
Yep, give us a subscribe so that you can get our awesome stuff without ever having to lift a finger. Oh, isn't technology grand, John?
Yes, it is. If you do the subscribe on the YouTube, hit the bell icon and you'll get a notification when a new episode goes up.
Yeah, you don't necessarily have to do the bell thing. The subscribe part is the part I'm already massively flattered by that. Yeah. I can understand why you wouldn't want the bell on.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. It's just something all YouTubers say, and I wanted to do it as a joke.
Our next game will be Titanfall 2.
Yes, Titanfall 2. I am so... I say this all the time. I am really excited to play Titanfall 2 because everything about Titanfall is just really appealing to me. Robots and guns.
Have
and
you played
parkour.
Titanfall?
No.
So I played Titanfall, the game. It's like the original Titanfall game, but it didn't have a multiplayer. It only had multiplayer.
In the
right?
first one, yeah.
In
yeah.
the first one.
That's why
the
I'm
second one has a single player yes. fucking campaign.
That's why we're going to play it, David.
And I'm so fucking excited for it.
Because
the other thing that disappointed me about Titanfall 1 is... Everyone in my friendship group said they were going to buy it. We were all going to play it together.
Yep.
I was the only one who fucking bought it.
Yep. Oh my God, David. We're both going to buy Titanfall 2.
We are.
Oh my God, we should play Titanfall 2.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at it.
Oh, this is going to be so much fun.
Yeah, it's a fucking awesome as hell game from a gameplay perspective. So yep. I'm very familiar with that. But as far as Titanfall 2 itself, never touched it.
Oh my God, David. We could do the single player campaign and play some of the multiplayer if it's still there.
Of Titanfall 2?
Yeah. Regardless, I don't think we've talked about a game with a multiplayer component. So it'd just be very interesting. Like a more direct one. But yeah. Anyway, that's the next game. Titanfall 2.
That's why I'm excited for it.
Come join us for robots. It should be a great time. I've enjoyed everything we've done. I hope you have too.
Thanks for joining us for the Brothers.